Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runners, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt, and we're brought to you by You Can Perform Workout. Energize. That's GenerationUCAN.com, by VeloFix.com, the world's coolest mobile bike shop, by Polar. Winners are made of blood, sweat, and data. By our Challenged Athletes Foundation, we just sent out 3,260 grants totaling $4.8 million to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. Check us out at challengedathletes.org. And you can check out any of our interviews on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Babbittville.com. And as always, endurance lives here. Our next guest, Sky Monch, is really taking the world by storm in terms of endurance sports, coming from her background as a CPA. Sky, how are you?
Hi, good, Bob. How are you?
Thanks for having me. No problem, Sky. I always like it when people sort of get into this sport a little late and then realize, Oh, my God, I'm pretty darn good at this. Was running your main sport growing up?
Yeah, I had run, you know, all the way back in elementary school. I remember doing little track meets with my school, and I always enjoyed running. And then, yeah, I really got into distance running when I was a teenager and ran my first marathon, and actually my only standalone marathon when I was 16. So
That was your only marathon. Was it one of those things you ran it and were like, okay, that's enough, I don't need to do that long again?
No, I don't know why I didn't do more. I think, you know, I got, you know, back into school, and then I was in college and working full time. I did a lot of half marathons. I really got into that distance. But yeah, the marathon, it's funny actually, when I was thinking about what I wanted to do with my life, and triathlon was on the table, but so was, you know, marathoning and getting faster and that. So yeah, those, I just had a few things that I thought maybe I could be good at. And anyway, triathlon, obviously,
yeah,
won that
so,
battle, but yeah.
How fast did you run in that marathon?
Oh, I don't remember the exact time, but I think it was about 4:15.
Nothing wrong with that.
So it wasn't crazy fast, but, you know, for a 16-year-old who just was out running with a neighbor, you know, not bad.
What did your folks think when you said, I'm going to go run a marathon and you're 16 years old?
Yeah, I mean, they were super encouraging and supportive. I think they thought it was a great opportunity to challenge myself. And, you know, obviously I had always been up for a challenge and was a hard worker, and yeah, they thought it was great.
So
I remember being very proud of myself doing that.
Well, you should have been. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you've always been the working type, right? You had jobs in high school. You started working when you were like 15 years old.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I, my very first job was actually cleaning houses for people and just like friends and family. I mean, I started doing that as, I think I was 13. My aunt asked me, she was the first one to pay me to clean her home. And that was my first, that's the first way I really earned money. I wasn't into babysitting. So don't ask me to watch your kids, but I'll clean your house. So, I cleaned houses, you know, all through high school and college. And, but then I always picked up other jobs too. I worked at a bakery. I worked at a bank. You know, I was always working. So,
when you're thinking about going to college, and everybody knows when you come out of college, you've got $50,000 to $100,000 and even more of debt. And your folks were pretty clear, it sounds like, that, listen, it's great that you want to go to college, but we really can't afford to fund it. You're going to have to figure that out on your own. That's pretty scary for, 17, 18-year-old kid.
Yeah, it's funny. I remember my mom having the conversation with me, and, you know, there's several universities in Utah that are reasonably affordable. I mean, it's very easy to get loans and just live it up and, you know, have the full college experience and not working. But, you know, my mom sat me down and she's like, hey, we're not going to be able to pay for all your schooling, but if you start working now, and this was in high school, you know, when I was old enough to work. And she's like, if you work hard and you save money and maybe, like, maybe you can get some scholarship or maybe not, but if you can, I think you can do this. I think, you know, it's, you don't have to take out a bunch of loans. And so I really thought about that. And of course it was a little scary because, Bob, at the time, I was cleaning homes. And I remember I was also working in a bakery. And minimum wage at the time was like $5.35 an hour. Like $5 an hour. So, I mean, I made way more cleaning homes, fortunately. But it's not like I was just bringing it in. I'm in high school. So, yeah, I decided that I was up for that challenge. And, yeah, full credit to my parents for putting, not putting that on me, but for, like, believing in me and honestly giving me the opportunity to really put my skin in the game because, man, I took full ownership of my college degree and my college experience and got the most out of it, I think. So I do remember, though, my mom took me to orientation my freshman year, and I remember writing my check for tuition that first semester, and that was okay. I mean, it felt like a lot for me. And then I remember going to buy my books.
Oh, my God.
And
yes.
I cried. Bob, I cried. Because the books were like $400 and you got like three textbooks or something. And I just remember crying. I'm like, oh, my gosh, all this stuff is so expensive. But
and you can't get – it's not like you can get them on eBay or something. You have to buy them from them.
You have to, and it has to be the latest version, and, you know, it's just, it's a bit of a racket, but anyway, that's how it goes, and anyway, it certainly toughened me up, but I enjoyed that I had to, like, rise to the occasion and, you know, take responsibility for myself at a young age, and obviously, my parents were so supportive and helpful, you know, where they could be, and it's not like I ever went without or I was in dire circumstance that wouldn't help me or something, but yeah, it was definitely up to me. And it's great though, because, you know, the choice of whatever I wanted to do in life has always been mine. Like, I don't owe anyone anything. I don't, you know.
Right. So you control your own destiny. So in 2009, you do your first triathlon. It's a reverse. It's a super sprint. You're finishing in the pool, which I love. I am the hugest fan of run, bike, swim in a pool at the finish because you're not worried about dying in open water, right?
That's true.
And you don't need – it's not like you need some $10,000 super bike to do a 9 or 10 or 12-mile bike ride. You're in an old swimsuit, cotton shorts, borrowed bike gear –
yep.
But you were top five.
Yeah, I remember finishing top five and thinking, are you serious? Like, that was so fun. And I did that well. And I think that was the first time I thought, oh, I'm actually like an all right athlete. I mean, obviously, I had been way into running and thought triathlon would be fun. And yeah, so my first exposure was a very positive one. Had fun, did well. And that certainly, you know, kind of got the fire burning for me in the sport of triathlon.
But you, at that point, you're not thinking, okay, I'm going to go become a pro.
No.
Yeah. And you're at BYU. You're in a bachelor's, master's, CPA.
Yeah.
And the other people that are in that same program, I'm guessing, are not cleaning houses.
No. In fact, the accounting school really encourages you to not work and to just really focus on the program because it's very intense. They put you in these groups of four or five people and, you know, you just have these massive homework assignments and projects. And it was really demanding, but when they said don't work, I thought, yeah, right. Like, I'm paying for everything. I have to work. So fortunately, I mean, the key for me was always finding jobs that were flexible so that I could really, you know, meet the demands of my accounting program, but also meet my financial demands. And I think it made me a better student because I really had to get the best out of myself all the time. And it really helped me to, you know, cut out things that weren't adding value to what I was trying to accomplish. So, yeah, I mean, I was a pretty busy girl there for a few years, but man, it was worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, maybe the average person needs to not work through school, but I think it's great to have more than just one thing consuming your life, you know?
So while you're in college and you had done that triathlon in 2009 And at this point, you don't own a bike, so you're sort of checking out the spreadsheet to figure when you could afford, right? When you could afford a bike, and you got, you're going to grad school. When you go to that bike shop, I'm imagining that you're looking at every single bike in there, that you're basically camping out there to get, I need a wetsuit, I need a bike, I need pedals. I want to make sure I get the best deal humanly possible because I know exactly how much I can spend.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely had a budget, and I was able to, work out in my budget spreadsheet when I'd be able to get a bike. It was after my internship with Ernst & Young. I was making pretty much full-time wages for a few months, which was huge for a college student. So, I went to this bike shop in Orem, Utah, and it was called SBR, and I wanted to walk out there with everything I needed to do a triathlon. So I picked myself up like a basic felt road bike, and I got a wetsuit, and I got pedals. I remember just getting a super basic computer that would show me time and distance. What else did I get? Bike shoes. I just walked out of there with a complete package. They had package deals, like, depending on how much you wanted to spend.
Right.
So, I bought the one I could afford. And, I think it was relatively cheap. I think I spent around $1,500 and got everything that I needed. It wasn't top of the line, obviously, but I could do a triathlon now.
Well, and you are the ultimate multitasker. I remember seeing photos of you. You're on the bike. You're studying. You're studying your accounting classes while you're on a trainer.
That was probably when I was studying for my CPA exams too. After college, I was working full time. I started my full time job in the summer after graduating, and then I had 4 CPA exams to pass, and those things are massive, and I am not naturally gifted at multiple choice tests. So I really, really had to put my time in and study. But I also needed to exercise because I love running, cycling. I love the endorphins, and I would set it up in my room, I'm sure.
Yes.
Yeah, you saw some pictures, and I would just try to do it all, but
That's very cool. So
good
then
times.
You start your full-time gig at Ernst & Young. And I remember years ago I was interviewing Chris McCormick, and he got his, my dream is to have this accounting job. I've got this accounting job, and this is what I'm getting my paycheck every week. I'm overlooking Sydney Harbor. I'm in my suit and tie, and I'm miserable. He would sneak off and have his dad drop. He had quit his job and was having his dad drop him off. He's wearing his suit and tie to go to the accounting office.
So funny.
And then he'd take the train back and go work out all day. And it took him a long time to make that. So when did you feel like, had you already had some success at triathlon before you made a decision to go part-time?
Yeah, I mean, success is a relative word.
Yeah.
I'd never done a race outside of Utah. So I'd only done local sprint races, and I had done a local half distance twice.
Mm-hmm.
And, any of the local races that I did, I would come in usually top 3 overall, which I thought was awesome.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it is awesome. Right. And I was just, that was just based off me, going to the pool a couple times a week and swimming maybe 2K. And that was based off me waking up in the morning and thinking, I'll go for a run, and then, if I can get off work early enough, I'll go for a ride up the canyon real quick. So it was totally just me going out there off of, no structured training. So, I mean, I was certainly and am certainly confident in my abilities. So, I'd experienced some local success, but I really thought that I could do better if I had a coach and I really dedicated myself. So I'd worked at Ernst & Young for 4 years, maybe around 3 years is when I started to feel, this burning inside of me that I needed to go explore triathlon, and, the desk wasn't doing it for me anymore. And what it was, Bob, is I would watch Kona on NBC, and it was the Chrissy Wellington era and Miranda Carfrae, and I would watch that special, and just sitting there on the couch watching, something inside of me was like, I think I could do this.
I need to be there.
Yeah, like, I think I could be one of these women on the Queen K Racing Pro. But, yeah, that's kind of a scary thing to voice when, you know, I haven't even done a full Ironman, and I really have not a lot of experience in the sport. But, yeah, there was just something inside of me that really believed in myself. So...
Well, it's funny.
I wanted to do it.
When we talked about, you know, Gwen Jorgensen before we started the conversation, and
yes.
Gwen was a CPA, started at Ernst & Young, and then she was recruited by Barb Lindquist to go and become a professional triathlete. She had a swim background, she had a run background, didn't know how to ride the bike, and was falling off at stoplights and the whole bit, but then eventually became the very best in the world, won the gold medal. Now, did you know her story at that point?
No, I didn't know anyone's story in the sport. And honestly, I think Gwen was kind of coming around.
2012 was her first Olympics, and 2016 was when she won the gold.
Oh, right. Okay, yeah. So, yeah, I didn't hear about her until I started with a coach and was kind of in the scene more. Because I really wasn't in the scene. Like, I don't even know that I knew triathlon was an Olympic sport when I,
right.
when I decided... to go part-time at my job. So, no, I had no idea. Really, the names, I was just starting to get to know some of the names. Like, I remember a coworker sent me an article about Meredith Kessler and how she had a corporate background and, you know, encouraging me, like, hey, look, you could do this too. Because, you know, I would talk to a few people about this, trying to make the decision of my next step in life. So, yeah, I was pretty... unaware of the triathlon scene and any of its superstars, just a few.
So you had things were set up perfectly. You have this house that's, 10 to 15 minutes from work. You can ride and run,
yep.
and you're living yep. there like 5 years. Everything's perfect. You're riding your bike, and you got you're doing triathlons, and you're doing well. But you having that discussion with your boss and saying, how hard was that?
Oh, man. Well, that was actually a really pivotal moment because obviously I was sitting at my desk kind of miserable for a while, like, what am I going to do? And then I realized one day that no one was going to go talk to my boss for me, and no one was going to make the changes for me, and I had to go do that. And, you know, that's a tough thing to do when I was a high performer at work. My boss really liked me. I mean, I liked my job and I liked how well I had done, but I needed more. So I just, one day it was like 1, 2, 3, get up and go. Walked down to my boss's office and I just said, hey, can we chat for a minute? And he's like, you're not quitting, are you? And I said, well, not exactly, but I have this passion. I'm like, I really just need to go pursue triathlon. I want to do professional triathlon. And, you know, I hadn't qualified for my pro card, nothing. I just was planning to get that taken care of. And yeah. And he said, okay, well, I kind of sensed that you weren't super happy around here, you know, as happy as you used to be. And, you know, what can we do? How can I support you? I want to support you. He was a very good boss. Like, I'm super grateful because he was totally willing to support me, and it was no surprise because I was always the girl who came in a little late. I'd been running or biking, or, you know, I'd try to leave early to go do a workout, you know, ride my bike. So it wasn't surprising at all, I don't think. But, yeah, he, you know, we worked out a flexible work arrangement, which is a part-time work program that Ernst & Young has. And, yeah, that worked for about a year, and then – you know, I qualified for my pro card and was kind of, I really wanted to be the best I could be. So I was all in. And after about a year of doing the flexible work thing with EY, I left Ernst & Young. So that was
that's hard.
February 2016, I officially left.
And became a pro.
Yeah, 2016 was my first pro season. So,
and how, a lot of times people will race as an amateur, and you went undefeated for 70.3 as an amateur.
Yeah.
So now you're a pro. How was it? Mm-hmm. How did you find it different?
Oh, well, it was very different. I mean, of course, I believed in myself and my abilities, but man, Oceanside was my first pro race.
Yep.
And it was, no, I wasn't like totally defeated after that race, but it was pretty shocking when I realized just how fast the women's pro field was. So that was a semi-rude awakening for me of like, wow, I have a lot of work to do. But I was up for it. Like, I signed up for this, and
right.
I knew
yeah.
I had zero experience. And honestly, the more I learned about, like, oh, I was racing against women who have been doing this for 10 years, or women who did short course, or, you know, women who have been swimming their whole lives. So, you know, I gave myself a little credit and a little break there, knowing that, you know, I had some catching up to do. So, I did what I just followed what my coach said. I worked really hard and, you know, believed that I could get there. So
when did you have that race that told you I belong? I made the right decision and I can be good at this.
Yeah. You know, my first year pro was all just kind of like experience. And obviously, I didn't ever feel like I didn't belong, but I certainly didn't feel like, I've made it. Like, this is where I want to be. So, and then I feel like I kind of didn't improve for a while, and that was tough. And I would say, honestly, I didn't feel like I really belonged, as in I was proud of my results and performing where I thought I could be until 2018, honestly,
really?
Last summer when I really started, you know, felt like I could get on the podium, or I felt like I was running as fast as I always thought I should have been. And, you know, just little things that I had in my head and standards that I had for myself that I wasn't reaching for a couple of years, which, you know, you can't blame me. I had no
background.
Yeah.
How important was Cam Watt in terms of, you know, this last couple of years, you've had some pretty major successes.
Yeah. I mean, he's been a huge help, obviously. I mean, that's where things really changed for me. I went to Australia at the beginning of last year, and not seeking out Cam or anything. I just went, I'm good friends with Sarah Crowley, and she's like, hey, you should just come train with us for the winter, my winter, their summer.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I just went out there thinking, yeah, you know, I need to make some changes. I'm going to do something different this winter. And my coach was very supportive. My coach at the time was Wes Johnson. He's a Utah-based coach.
Yep.
And, yeah, he does a lot with Paralympics and stuff. You may know his name. So, I went out there and did a lot of training with Cam and Cam's squad. And, yeah, by the end of that trip, I just really felt like the next step for me was to work directly under Cam. I really enjoyed the training and really just thought that he would be able to help me get to that next level. And I'm really grateful that Cam was willing to work with me, because it's turned out to be, I think, a total game changer for me.
So this year, you did Frankfurt last year, correct?
Uh-huh. Yeah, I did.
And you were what, seventh, something like that?
Yeah, I was seventh.
Yeah.
Not bad, but
no.
It was a bit of a rough day for me, but yeah.
So this year, Frankfurt was literally 100 degrees, right?
100 to literally was.
I mean, I see 42 Celsius. I think that's like 107, something like that. That's ridiculous.
It was hot, yeah.
Yeah, so so Sarah True, you guys are sort of all around out together out of the water. Sarah True was fourth in Kona last year. She won. She was second at Frankfurt last year.
Yes.
So she's coming in as sort of the person to watch, and
yes.
She's building up a lead. But you guys were what, right together off the bike, correct?
Off the bike, yeah. There was about three or four of us right off the bike together. So.
Yeah. But then yeah. Sarah took off. She had 2 minutes at the end of the first lap, multi-lap event. And
yes.
If that's 2 minutes when it's that hot out, I'm guessing that you're thinking, I'm not chasing her. I'm just trying to get to the finish line.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I was out dealing with the heat as much as anyone, and I knew that that could be a critical part of the day. And, you know, my coach, Cam, he said to me, he's like, Sky, it's a four-loop course, and we're not even racing that first lap. we're eating and drinking, and we're setting ourselves up for the end of that marathon.
Smart.
And so Sarah took off, Imogen Simmons, she even took off a little bit, and that was her first Ironman, so I was, like, very happy to let her go. Not that I was counting her out, but I was like, okay, well, I know how bad this is going to hurt later. I'm just going to sit here and eat and drink. And I even ran up next to Imogen not only a couple Ks into the run, and I just said, hey, we can just jog this lap. Like, it's cool. Because, you know, when you first get off the bike, even jogging, you're still running quite fast, but it feels fine because you're only 5K into the run. So it feels relatively slow, but it feels good. So, yeah, I knew that I had to run my own race. And obviously, I know Sarah True is a very accomplished Olympian and
yep.
even Ironman competitor. And I know that she runs a very fast marathon. I mean, I don't think she's even run over 3 hours. She's always under, she's been under in the two.
Yeah.
I think. So, and I knew that I probably wasn't going to be running that speed that day. So, yeah, I just buckled into my race, my pace, and just focused on that. And, you know, I could see Sarah throughout the marathon. There's a few little out and back sections where if you're looking, you can see competitors if you're close enough. So I saw her throughout, and she was looking good. And, man, I was happy for her, you know.
Sure.
Sarah's going to win. She's going to get her Kona slot. I'm going to get my Kona slot because I felt pretty comfortable with my second place.
Two Americans. Americans first and second. We like that.
This is awesome. So, yeah, I mean, it was I was locked in that mindset. So
yeah, so she's got a 7-minute lead going to the last lap,
and yeah.
So you're not seeing her towards the end there. When did you find out that she was out of the race and you're winning the race?
Oh man, I had no idea what was going on ahead of me, like zero. I don't even think Cam was there, and I don't even think he knew, because you would have had to been like in the exact perfect place on the course to know what was happening. So, yeah, I didn't know until I passed where she had passed out.
Right.
And the lead cyclist, I saw the cyclist there on the side of the road. So this is what, like 1,000 meters from the finish or give or take.
Yeah.
And I see the lead cyclist there and I thought, oh, they must have let Sarah go. Like, because this lead cyclist never actually goes through the finish chute.
Right.
So I thought, oh, that's weird. This is a little early, but maybe they stop here. And then he starts riding with me, and I look back just to see, and I'm like, wow, that is the first place cyclist riding next to me. And I think he knew that I had no idea. And he said, Sky, congratulations. This is your race now. And I just said, are you serious? And he's like, yeah, Sarah's not going to make it. And at that point, I thought, oh, my gosh, like, this just completely changed my day.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, I've gone from second to winning one of the biggest races in triathlon. And I was obviously sad for Sarah, happy for myself. But, and I just, at that point, just focused on getting to that finish line because I really didn't know how close anyone behind me was. So I thought, okay, well, I am holding on to this first place now. And I just ran as hard as I could to get to that finish. And yeah, it was crazy. You know, I always thought I would be super emotional and cry during my first win, but I couldn't even process it. Like, it was just a shock. I was shocked. And
that's wild. The last time I saw something like that was in Kona when Paul Newby Frazier collapsed, like, half a mile from the finish, and Karen Smyers ran by her. But, you know, the deal is that you have to look at it from the perspective of Sarah obviously was feeling pressure behind her and was running hard, right? So it's not like Karen caught Paula because she wasn't thinking about Karen. She was worried about someone coming up from behind. And Sarah pushed herself past their limits and she collapsed. So, you know, that's a lot of times you win something like that and you're feeling, gosh, do I really deserve this? I realized I didn't lead till the end and the other person dropped out. And that person didn't drop out because they were doing a time trial. They dropped out because they were in a race, and that race got the best of them. And the whole idea was Cam told you at the beginning. This is a this is an eating and drinking contest, and it's not a race until you get to that last lap of the run. And that's all that matters. So that's cool.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. It was crazy and certainly a good lesson, and anything is possible in Ironman racing. So
no question. So how does that change things for you when you win a? And people in Germany are crazy, right? The fans are, the crowds are huge, and that is one of the top three, top four events in the planet. And to win that, how did that change things for you when you won that race?
Well, I guess, you know, immediately after and the few days after, I mean, there was a lot of attention.
Yep.
I guess a lot of everyone at home was so happy for me. Social media went crazy. Like, people started following me, or tons of messages. And I think it really just put my name, you know, out there. And I think maybe some people had noticed that I'd started gaining some momentum and having some, you know, some podiums and some success. But I think maybe Frankfurt hopefully, you know, solidified me as a top performer and a contender for a win in any given race. So, it certainly boosted my confidence as well, because, the ending was crazy. But, you know, I had to be in the position to take advantage of that. So it's still... You know, I was there, and it was big. It's been good for me, and I hope that it helps me, you know, being relatively new to being successful in the sport. I don't have a lot of sponsorship. I don't have, you know, that kind of support that you hope to have as a professional. So I'm just still working hard to try and maintain and, keep winning and keep performing. So,
well, obviously, when you win in a 106 degree heat, that sets you up well for something like Kona, where the heat is better. Have you been over there?
No, I have never been to Kona. I didn't do an Ironman until I was a pro. So, I've never watched. I've never gone over to watch, and I've never competed. So this is full on first time, but. I mean, I'm looking forward to it, and I'm kind of looking forward to the fact that I don't know what to expect, because I don't know, like, I'm not psyching myself out over anything.
The funny part was, I remember the first time Danielle Arif came over, we were interviewing her on Breakfast with Bob right there on, you know, at Huggo's on the Rocks right there on Lead Drive, and she's like, so does the race go by here? Like, this is called a Lee Drive. This is where the run comes. It was like, okay, that's right. She's never been here before. And she'd only done, I think her first, you know, Ironman was 2 months, 3 months earlier. And next thing you know, she's winning 70.3 worlds and coming over to do this Kona thing. Do this Kona thing. So that being over there and all this being new, you're going to love it all. It's
I'm excited.
It's a crazy experience. So what, after Frankfurt, in terms of your build up to Kona, what are your plans?
Yeah, well, I did Boulder 70.3 about a week and a half ago.
Yep.
And I won that. That was my first 70.3 win.
Look at that. Now you're on a roll.
So that was really cool too. I took some rest. We rested up, and I didn't feel like I was training that hard the month after Frankfurt. I mean, I was still training, but I know how hard we really train, and that wasn't it. So, the build up, I'm staying home. I'm in Salt Lake City, and, you know, I'm just going to stay home. I've got a great setup. The weather's quite hot, very hot right now, and, you know, stays quite warm through September. And we thought about some camp options and ultimately decided that staying home where I'm used to everything and have a good system. And I'll get to Kona 10 days out. And I'm expecting some pretty brutal training weeks coming up. So
very cool. Now, do you have, is Cam's group coming to Salt Lake to train? Do you have a group?
Yeah. Well, most of them have been stayed over in Europe. You know, we, most of us go over to St. Moritz, and Cam's been there. Cam's still there. And, you know, I was in Europe for 5 weeks and then came home. Summer's so good in Salt Lake. I mean, we have the mountains. It's really hot. I mean, I just really enjoy being here. So I came home. excuse me, I came home and Sarah Crowley's here with another teammate up in Park City. I haven't done much with her at all, actually, so far, but we'll see if our training starts to line up a little more. But there is, Else Visser is going to come over and train with me for the Kona build, or for the last bit of the Kona build. So she gets over here in September. Cam decided to send her over to train with me. So
nice.
I will have one training partner. Yeah.
Is it hard to train with somebody who you've got a race on race day?
Not for me. I mean, I don't know. I do pretty well with being around people. I can handle it. But also, I do so much alone so much of the year that it's kind of nice when I get someone to train with.
Right.
I enjoy both. But in terms of like Elle's coming over and she'll be racing Kona. Yeah, I don't care, because race day is race day.
Yeah.
And then it's every man for himself and
exactly.
woman for herself. So, I don't struggle with that at all. It's fine with me.
So your boss from Ernst & Young, now that you're an Ironman, did he reach out to you after you won Frankfurt?
No, I haven't heard from him. I've thought about reaching out to him.
Yes. You should go in and talk to those guys.
Know. Yeah, yeah. He's actually retired, but I know he works. He's doing, his life after retirement. He's got another job now. So,
That's so cool.
I should go hit him up for sure.
That is so wild. Now, do you look back and go, man, if I had known about this sport when I was younger, I would have gone Olympics. I would have tried that short distance stuff. Or do you look at it, you know what? I got into this later and I love it. And it was a perfect timing for me.
Yeah. I certainly had thoughts of, man, what if,
sure.
I had friends in high school who really encouraged me to do swim team. And it was tough. Like my mom worked, my sister and I shared a car in high school. So like getting to swim practice at 5 a.m. and all these things, like I just logistically was like, oh, that would be fun, but it just seems a little hard for me to do. So looking back now, the one thing I wish I would have done is swim team, but no regrets. I'm really grateful for the position I'm in right now. Like I already have my education and I've had a life before triathlon,
Right.
My entire self-worth isn't based on my triathlon results or the sport of triathlon. And I think it really keeps me level-headed and keeps me, I just don't feel like I get too caught up in things like even sponsorship, and kind of that can be a frustrating thing sometimes.
Sure.
And it's like, well, just remember, like, this isn't why I started doing triathlon. I didn't do triathlon to try to get someone to give me a bike. Like, I'm doing this because I really wanted to challenge myself and I wanted to fulfill an area of my life, and that's why I'm doing it. And so, yeah, I think I'm super grateful for how it's played out. Sure, it would have been nice to be a swimmer all my life maybe have started, but no, I'm especially now that I'm performing at a level that I always thought I could. It's great.
I love
great
it.
Great timing.
Sky, you're doing great stuff. I love the fact that you don't have to be thinking about, oh, I got to go to this race because I got to pay my mortgage. And that type of stuff is hard. That puts way too much pressure on people. You're in a position where you love what you do and you're having success, and that's all that matters.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Bob.
Sky Munch has been our guest. Sky, thank you again for taking so much time to chat. I love what you do, and we'll see you in Kona.
Yes, looking forward to it. Thanks, Bob.
All right. Again, my name is Bob Babbitt. This is Babbittville Radio. We are brought to you by UCAN. Perform, workout, energize. That's GenerationUCAN.com. By VeloFix.com, the world's coolest mobile bike shops. By Polar. Winners are made of blood, sweat, and data. By our Challenged Athletes Foundation, we sent out 3,260 grants, totaling $4.8 million. Keep challenged athletes in the game alive through sport. You can help out at challengedathletes.org and check out any of our interviews on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and Babbittville.com. As always, endurance lives here.